This is Lawrence Tuning, and these are my 88 friends.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song that will help me along. They're my one-man band. I'm the number one fan. Me and my 88. Me and my 88 friends.
It's that time of the week again for me to sit and chat with you. I hope some of you are out there listening to me. This show is called Me and My 88 Friends. I'm Lawrence Tuning, your host. And as I say every week, this show gives me an opportunity to sing to you various songs that I've written over 50 plus years. And we interview people, we tell stories, we look in the Word, we sing. It's all got one purpose, one focus, and that is to cause us to draw closer to this wonderful Savior we have named Jesus. We're Jesus people, and I've always liked to keep the focus on Him. You can debate all kinds of other things, but if we rally around Jesus, if you love Him, and I love Him, and we're both trying to obey Him, then we have great fellowship together. So I thank you for listening to us. Today I'm going to interview my friend, my buddy. His name is Buddy, but he helps me in immeasurable ways to put this show together. But I want to start out with a song I did live in 2014 at a coffee house here in Florence, South Carolina, where I live, called Lula's. This song was based on a true story. It's called Phone Call.
All day long, for some reason, you've been on my mind. So I decided to call you whenever I could find the time. It must have been in high school when I saw you last. And you believe it's been all these years, time sure went by fast. To call your mother to find out just where you were. She gave me your number, said to say hello for her. How do you like Chicago? I'm still living in the East. Do you have any children now? We've got two. About to tell you, it's gonna be a big surprise. Something great has happened, something that changed my life. I gave my heart to Jesus, asked Him to forgive my sin. You won't believe the difference since I followed Him. Tell me why are you laughing? Was it something that I said? Tell me why are you laughing? Would you rather have me hang up instead? We were always best friends. I never thought you'd laugh at me. it that you want me to say? You gave your heart to Jesus just as soon as you came home from the war. And you've been thinking of calling me, but you put it off a year or more. You were always my best friend, now you're my brother too.
That song had to do with a man who I met who tried to find an old friend. He hadn't seen him in a long time to tell him that he had had a great change in his heart. As it turned out, the guy had already had a change in his heart and wanted to tell him his story. I've seen that happen many times. Many people that grew up as teenagers had no interest in the Lord. As life goes on, what happens is the process of elimination points you toward a relationship with God. In other words, nothing really gives that satisfaction. So you try this, you try that, and pretty soon the process of elimination has left you with only one last option. My old friend who has since gone to heaven, Gary S. Paxton, wrote a song called "He Was There All the Time." Waiting patiently in line, he was there all the time. So that's what that song was about. Two friends got on the phone and realized both of them had turned to Christ in the intervening years that they hadn't seen each other. This is our 20th episode of Me and My 88 Friends. And I want to tell you that I've just gotten the news that very shortly, probably within the next week or two, we are going to have the capability to archive all of our episodes. And many of you that have not been able to tune us in at 7 o'clock on Saturday nights or 11 or 12 on Sundays or 8 on Saturday nights, you can go to my website, lawrencetuning.com, or the website of WRGR, and click a button for whichever episode that you want to listen to. There will be a little synopsis of each episode. And so hopefully this will expand our audience. I hope you will tell your friends about the show. Get them to tune in either live when we broadcast on Saturday and Sunday or on their own time, you know, on their own computer. I also hope that if you're listening here and you are a Christian, you will encourage friends who are open to finding the Lord or who are not walking with the Lord, that you will encourage them to listen to the show. I have a real heart for the common guy that doesn't feel comfortable in church, but still has a heart who's seeking for truth and seeking for fulfillment. So the first episode that we ever did 5 months ago, I sang a song that was on my latest CD called The Night That Changed My Life. This goes all the way back to the night as an 8-year-old that I knelt at an altar and asked Jesus into my heart. The best decision I ever made. I've never looked back. And I want to play that again. It's called The Night That Changed My Life. No, I never wrote down the day, but I can take you to the spot where the Lord reached down from heaven and He came into my heart. I believe it was early summer. I was still a child when I heard Jesus call me, and I walked down the aisle. My mother knelt beside me. I remember it to this day. She put her arm around me and she began to pray. Then my tears started falling, for I was praying too. Since she asked, do you feel better now? And I smiled and I said, I do. Oh, I never made the local paper or the early morning news. Just an ordinary meeting of the midweek faithful few. But in heaven the scene was joyous. Changed my This show is really a group effort. There are various people that assist me in great ways. I would not be able to do this if not for them. I want to thank God for my friend Lonnie Curl, who is a pastor of a church called Lamb's Chapel. He's actually going to be interviewed on this show probably next week. He has graciously allowed us to use his sanctuary for the studio for this show. Julie Carroll helps promote the show. I have a wonderful band of musicians that help me put songs together. Keith Hamrick, Brian Hoogenboom, Russell James, and Jason Dowdy. And I really, really lean on this person I'm going to talk to now, named Buddy Miles. He's actually Carl Miles the second. Now that sounds very sophisticated until I tell you his hometown. Buddy, can you tell me your hometown's name?
Gladly, Lawrence. Matter of fact, my hometown was once featured on Hometown Salutes on Hee Haw.
Wow, Hee Haw.
Salute!
Tell them the name.
The small town of Hawkeye, South Carolina.
Hawkeye, that's H-O-G, Hawkeye. We don't really come from hugely metropolitan and cosmopolitan areas. Hawkeye, South Carolina. Buddy is a generation...
I guess X.
X.
Yeah.
I'm older than his father. And I didn't know till recently, Buddy, because my grandson informed me that some of the other generations laugh at baby boomers. We always grew up thinking we were the coolest generation of all, and these people laugh at us. But Buddy is the same age as my daughter, but he doesn't treat me with the respect that my daughter does, believe me. I asked God to give me humility. He said, I'm going to send you the source that will keep you humble from here on out. His name is Buddy. But let me say this about Mr. Miles here. He's going to turn 40 years old.
April 17th.
In April.
Yeah.
But when I think of Buddy Miles, I think of the following things. First of all, I think of, is it fair to say comical, zany, to the point of ridiculousness sometime. In fact, I thought long and hard before we decided to do this interview because we laugh all the time. But he's also a praise leader and a musician. He's on staff here at the church here in Florence. He is an outdoorsman. I've never seen anybody love a boat or a kayak or a snake more than him. He's also a great father, great husband, and something that's very dear to my heart. He is a foster father. I haven't talked about this a whole lot on the show, but for 20-something years, I also worked as an adoption worker and a foster care worker. So welcome to the show, Buddy.
Thank you, Lawrence.
And what are we going to talk about? I got a whole list of possible questions.
Oh, boy.
Okay. We want to talk about the Lord, but let's talk about some other things first. One thing that he is fascinated by that is just abhorrent to most people, he has a fascination with finding snakes. Now, we have a lot of snakes here in South Carolina. My philosophy has always been the only good snake is a dead snake. In fact, I've grown up believing that the shovel was invented not for digging holes in the ground, but as a do-it-yourself homemade guillotine to chop the heads off of snakes. That's how they do it around here. You just get a shovel, you stand back, and you chop. But this guy can spot them everywhere. And have you ever killed a snake?
Yeah, but I mean, believe it or not, you know, I grew up rural South Carolina, and we kind of ascribe to the same ideology that a good snake was a dead snake, and you know, we'd find them in the garden, and that was always kind of what we did, was killed them. And they are, believe it or not, they irked me when I was little. I didn't like them. I thought they were, the way they moved, like, kind of weirded me out.
And yes, yes. Most normal people feel that way.
Yeah, and I guess for me, you know, there just came a time where I was like, I remember one time I was fishing and I saw one, and it was laying beside me the whole time, and I didn't even know it was there. And it weirded me out so much that I ended up leaving my fishing spot. And I was just, had an opportunity when my oldest son was in the fourth grade, to go to a herpetology center down at Seabrook Island. And I was just kind of like, you know, I'm outside, I see snakes all the time, they're there. So I need to kind of get over this feeling that I have. And so I handled some of the ones that they had there on exhibit. And
now, please don't get a rumor out, everybody, that I'm interviewing a snake handler or one of these churches way up in the mountains where they handle snakes. But but you find them almost every week. You have a picture of a snake you found.
Well, I mean, the thing is, they're always there. You just got to know where to look. And so I've just, you know, I've learned from being in the outdoors that there are certain types of places where there's likely to be one, and I'll check a lot of times, and boom,
But you like to go check them out.
Yeah. Yeah. If I see one, I try to get my hands on it, take a picture with it.
Have you ever been bit?
I have not.
I know a man who got bit by a rattlesnake. This is the truth now. At least he said it was. Well, I knew of him. Back in my childhood days, there was a man who was out in the woods. He was working in the woods, and this was before cell phones. And he got bit by a rattlesnake. He said it was a rattlesnake. And my dad asked him, so what did you do? He said, well, I found me a tree stump and sat down. And he said, I looked up at the sky. And I said, Jesus, I need you. And I need you now. And he said, thank God the line wasn't busy. You heard me. He lived. I don't know if the snake lived or not. But anyway, I was thinking about this, thinking about you, and we're going to move away from the snake topic here in a second. But when God made the world, he said everything was good. So that had to mean the snake was originally good.
Yeah, sure.
And the wild thing about it is, I mean, I think of the devil when I'm going to be honest. I think most people do. You think of the devil when you see a snake.
Yeah,
I do.
They do. Yeah.
However, in the book of, the Pentateuch, I forget which book it was, there was a point where the people began to be bit by snakes. God's judgment fell on them, and God told Moses to make a bronze statue of all things of a snake and hold it up in the air, and if the people would look at that snake, they would be healed. And when Jesus came along, we've heard this term, I have my whole life, let Jesus be lifted up. We want to lift up Jesus. That's a reference to the snake. And Jesus said, as Moses lifted up the bronze serpent, if I be lifted up, I'll draw all men to me. So you think of the snake as the devil, but Jesus referred to, in a sense, him being a divine snake. I can't say that on the air, divine snake. That sounds sacrilegious, but the snake was a type of what would happen to Jesus on the cross. So you look to Jesus, you'll be healed. So I hope you don't ever get bit by a snake, buddy. But I think you need to be more careful.
I try my best. I have a little hook, you know, that I use to hold them. One thing to kind of add to what you were just saying is one of the ways that I've always felt connected to God is through nature.
I was going to ask you that.
Yeah, so when I'm out there, you know, I see these beautiful lakes and mountains and rivers and animals, and I'm just like, whoa, man, God is awesome and his creation is awesome. And that's kind of where the fascination with snakes came from, is that they, you know, I mean, I've seen snakes catching fish. They've climbed walls and trees. They don't have any hands, and they can do anything they need to do to survive. And it's just I don't think of them in terms as being an evil creature. I'm just like, hey, God is awesome. He made something that can survive with less features than we have.
Now, I've got friends right now who are heading toward the computer to turn this podcast off because they're scared to death of snakes. So let's move on. I want to say a couple other things about you. You have how many children?
Five.
Five biological children and one?
No, I have four sons.
Four sons.
Yeah, and one
foster daughter,
yep.
And I've seen you really pour your life into your kids, and it's just been a wonderful thing to watch. So any tips you have for any fathers out there, any brand new fathers, what have you learned? How have you learned to prioritize your life to include your kids? Because I know you include them in all sorts of things.
Well, that's an easy thing to answer. My dad, he always told me, I remember him making a statement to me growing up about how, you know, he could have had a job making X amount of money or whatever, but he always wanted to be available to us and a part of our lives. And that, when I became a father, just really became important to me. You know, I had a job, I was a banker, and I was on this career path, and then I had kids, and that became my focus. And so, I try every day when I come home from work, first thing I do is I locate all of my children and say, hey, give them a, I mean, they're my world, you know? So to me, it's just natural. Like I don't have a problem. I look forward to it. You know, my youngest son stays under me all the time when I'm home, want me to play with him. And like, you know, I just eat it up. So.
I read a thing one time, buddy, where the president, the second president of the United States, John Adams, he kept a diary. And, of course, John Quincy Adams, who became the sixth president, was his son. And his son kept a diary, even when he was a little boy. And John Adams wrote in his diary, this is on the same day now, John Adams wrote, not a very productive day, spent time with John, with Johnny. John Quincy Adams wrote, this was the most wonderful day of my life. Dad and I spent time together. And it's such a different perspective. And I know I was growing up, see, I'm in a different generation than you. That's why I wish you would respect me a little bit more. This man holds my feet to the fire all the time. We'll talk about that in a minute. But my parents' generation, grandparents' generation, this was the philosophy. It was the husband's job to make the money. This was before a lot of women entered the workplace. So if a husband provided the money for the family, he pretty much was off the hook with everything else. It was the wife's job to raise the children, to spend time with them, to teach them about life and all of that. And that really did change. I think need to give credit where credit is due. I think people like James Dobson were some of the first to start really dealing with the issue of how to be a good father and began to expand men's views of what it means to impart things to your children. So let's talk about your parents, your upbringing, buddy, because I want to talk about how you came to the Lord. You came to the Lord as...
I was about 15 years old.
15? Yeah. I thought you came when you were like 5 years old.
No. Now, when I was five, because I did grow up in church, my grandmother used to love to tell stories about how I would get her little paperback Jimmy Swaggart Bible. She babysat me and a bunch of other kids in the community. And I would gather the kids in her living room and preach to them. And she always got a kick out of that. You know, he was preaching the sermon that our preacher shared with us at church yesterday, and she would sing some songs. I'd call on her like she was in the choir, and she would sing songs, and all the little kids would sit there and listen to the message. And so, I knew about church. I grew up in it, but 15 is kind of where I credit that conversion experience in my life.
Now, buddy, you won't believe this. I don't want to make a big confession, but you know how I was traumatized by the story of a chicken when I was growing up, the chicken that pecked a cousin in the face because he went for the chick. So I don't want anything to do with chickens other than eating them. I don't want to hold them or anything. But I would actually, as a kid, would go and pretend I was a preacher to the chickens. I would stand there at a good safe distance, and I'd pretend I was preaching.
Well, you would have not liked my grandmother's house on my mom's side because she had a rooster that would chase us every time we went in the yard. Yeah,
no, nothing to do with it, unless it's a Gamecock, a South Carolina Gamecock, which is the football team, which is not that good, really. But okay, 15 years old. You went to church all the time, though, right? 3 times a week?
Yeah, pretty much every time the door was open.
But you never really felt that pull of the Lord till you were 15?
Well, I always had, a desire from a young age. But I just never really, I feel like that's the point that I committed, you know, my life to where I wanted to live differently, do things differently. It kind of clicked at that moment, I guess.
Okay, what was it? Were we at church?
Yeah, we were having I don't remember if it was a revival or what, but I just remember there was some praying going on, and I started playing guitar when I was 15, so I was playing at church, and I don't know, just kind of, I had this little experience. I got all excited on the inside, and I just remember standing there on the stage and just kind of praying, you know, for God.
So, no, wait a minute. You didn't miss a beat when you're conversing. You just kept playing.
No, I just kept. I mean, I was playing.
You didn't
the
kneel. You didn't say. You just kind of nodded your head, yes, Lord, and kept going.
You know, just like God come into my heart and just.
Wow.
I was in the middle of a song that I had to keep going. So.
Do you remember what song it was?
I have no idea.
It's just an amazing thing to me how that happens, and I. Just about everybody I interview, I want to know, because there is always that moment, and I will talk about this after you sing your song, but I want to get back to this, that moment when what was once calloused is not calloused anymore, and you feel the drawing, that tender drawing. And with you, you had been in church all those years. And probably many people had come to the Lord over those years, but it never really touched you till that moment you were playing the guitar. And they let you play even though you weren't a born-again Christian yet. They said,
right. Well, you know, I mean, I came from the church I grew up in. It was one of those, like, you know, Stevie and Uncle Johnny and whoever, like, you know, you play guitar. There would be services sometimes where there was six guitars up on the stage and everybody's up there framing on a song, you know. And it's, there would be times whenever I would show up to visit my parents at church after I got older, and people would be like, "Where's your guitar?" I was like, "I didn't bring it," because I knew y'all gonna have, like, you know, plenty of music going on. So
now, you told me one time that your grandmother had a great influence on you.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. My dad's mom lived right beside us my entire life growing up. And she was the matriarch of our family. You know, she had 35 great grandkids. We had a huge family, and she was very much our spiritual leader.
And didn't you tell me she gave you a guitar?
Well, that was my grandmother on my mom's side. So she gave me, my aunt passed away when I was, I think the year I was born, and she played guitar. My grandmother had her guitar, it was like a 1971 Applause guitar, and she said she was hanging on to it, and if anybody ever learned how to play, she was going to, like, pass it down to them. So it was my first guitar. And
wow, yeah. That's great. All right. Now, I'm going to have you sing a song that you wrote here in a minute. But be nice, though. What do you think the greatest challenge of doing this show has been, trying to keep me corralled in the right direction? We know I have ADD, but the sad thing about it is I know you have it, too. So how in the world will we ever get anything done?
Well, I think that helps me understand you. So, you know, I kind of know what it takes to keep you on track, I guess.
That's true. People who have attention deficit.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense to anybody else, but we kind of know what...
I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Okay, but buddy, you came to the Lord at 15 years old. Did you have struggles between then and now? Some people come to the Lord like at an early age, and they just don't grow. It's like they're frozen. In other words, they're 38 years old, but they're walking with the Lord... they've never grown. They're not walking with him with an adult mind. You know, it's just, people used to say, I've been saved and sanctified and petrified. You just never grew. How has your journey been, your walk been since 15? Have there been key moments that have been turning points in your life?
Yeah, I mean, there was, you know, even though I had a relationship and I felt, you know, that my life had been changed, I struggled. You know, I was a teenager, so I had the pressures of high school and trying to fit in, and, you know, I can remember just kind of, you know, not behaving the way I should or doing things I shouldn't have done or thinking things I shouldn't have done. And I would feel guilty and beat myself up over it. And I kind of always had this deal with God. I'd be like, oh, man, Lord, I promise you, just let me like get out of high school and I promise I'll get this right. You know, it was kind of it was a difficult thing. It's, you know, it's there's a lot of pressure at that stage in your life. And I didn't always toe the line the way I should have. But I knew I was different. I knew that there was, you know, people would sometimes identify that there was something different. Yeah. And I just, you know, it was kind of one of those things where I had, at that point too, I had a desire, that was kind of growing in my life to be involved in ministry. And, you know, I was planning, kind of like had a strong desire to go to Bible college. You know, this is kind of where I was, the direction that I felt pointed. I ended up not going to Bible college. I went to university here in Florence. And I was involved all throughout my college career. I was involved in Baptist collegiate ministries. And so I think that kept me kind of out of a lot of things that I would have probably gotten involved with.
Right.
But, you know, that's kind of the thing. It's like I look back, here I am 40 years old now, and I look back over my life, and I'm just like, I can see how even whenever I wasn't thinking how I should be thinking or doing how I should be doing, like God always kind of had the guardrails up on me, you know, and I've bounced off of them a few times.
Yeah.
But it's like I've never in my life have I ever struggled with like purpose, meaning, you know, like I know I have a purpose. I know I have a meaning, and I don't always understand it. Always don't know what it is, but I'm just one day at a time, you know.
Sweet and, Jesus. Yeah, that's the song.
One
says.
Day at a time, sweet Jesus.
You never said what your challenge was here with me.
I only get one.
Yeah, give me your top two or three.
I have a list.
I'm sure you do.
But the biggest challenge with Lawrence, y'all, is Lawrence is such a talented guy.
Thank you.
That he wants.
Here comes the singer.
He wants everything to be perfect. And so sometimes we'll do a take and he wants to redo it. And I'm like, Lawrence, that was fine. Well, I didn't sound right. I sounded real country or like, you know, or something like that. And we're just having to go back and like, we're, you know, sometimes 10 takes before we can get one sentence completed. And, but other than that, I mean, it's a breeze. You're organized. And
you cracked the whip on me finally last week. I said, we need to cut the aw out. I'm saying too many, and he finally said, you improve the way you speak. I'm not doing it anymore. I'm not going to cut it out every time you say And
you take advantage.
I just said anyway.
You take advantage of the scissor tool on this program.
I do. Yeah. I do. I work him. Yeah. We have talked about that. We noticed that as interviews go on, I get more excited and start talking faster. And I get more country as we go along. So I've been trying to really work on that. Buddy, you're a great guy. I love you. And I'm thankful that God brought you into my life, even if you do keep me humble. Now, you're going to sing us a song now.
Yeah.
You want to
introduce
it?
Yeah, sure. So this, you know, you and I have talked in the past about, I've always had a desire to kind of write songs, but I get frustrated at the process sometimes. But a few weeks ago, our pastor, during a time of worship, kind of stood up and he'll do this often, just kind of grab the mic and kind of start singing something from his heart. And he did this one Sunday a few weeks ago, and I took the video from our Facebook page and was just kind of went through and transcribed everything he said. And then I took those lines and kind of structured them into a song, and that's what this was born out of.
And what's the name of it?
It's called Rain Forevermore.
Rain Forevermore. This is the great, incomparable Buddy Miles.
We are here in your presence. We are ready to draw near. We come boldly to your throne. Lift up our voice. We declare, you are awesome and mighty. You are steadfast and true. So we've come here together, lifting our song of praise to you. Holy, holy, holy. Holy is our Lord. Holy, holy, holy. You reign forevermore. You were, you are, and will be. We can never change your plan. We lift our voice to you, Lord, here in the place where we stand. Holy, holy, holy. Holy is our Lord. Holy, 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 you reign forevermore. Holy, holy, holy. Holy is our Lord. Holy, holy, holy. You reign forevermore. You reign forevermore. You reign forevermore.
I'm talking to my engineer and co-producer, Buddy Miles. He's a guitar player. You just heard him sing, actually, a song he wrote. And, of course, I'm a piano player, Buddy. I wanted to be a guitar player. I tried very hard. Well, I didn't try that hard. I bought a $15 guitar at a pawn shop when I was 15. We started our guitar career at the same time. I ended up learning two songs. Detroit City. Last night I had it. You remember that old country
song? Yeah.
The Cotton Fields Back Home in honor of my father. And I think I learned All My Trials. That was an old folk song. But I never liked playing the guitar. I quit very early in the game. You know why I quit?
Well, you couldn't take reasons. The pain.
Yeah. Well, that's right. I didn't want to stand up. I'm lazy. I like to sit down and play. But the girls always went for the guitar player, but even more than that, the drummer. The drummer. All the girls loved the drummer. But next to the drummer, the girls never went for the piano player. I mean, let's face it, they never went for the piano player. It was always, so I thought, well, I'd be cooler if I could play the guitar. But I told my friend, I said, I don't like playing the guitar. He said, why? I said, it hurts my fingers. The strings just cut into my fingers. And he said, oh, Lawrence, they tell me. Now, like, he was going to be a guitar player, too. We both flopped. But he said, they tell me if you keep doing it, you're going to develop calluses on your fingertips, and you won't feel it anymore. And that's true.
To an extent.
Okay.
When we come here on Sunday mornings and we run through our pre-service stuff and then we do the set list, my fingers are hurting by the time we get done.
Okay, you just ruined my story, buddy. You just ruined my point. I'm trying to get to a spiritual point. But a callus will grow. A callus is just a little growth, you know. It grows. And you can't feel things when you got a callus there. And the Bible talks about our hearts becoming calloused. The prophets would speak to the Israelites and say, your hearts have become callous. You've got calluses on your hearts. You can't feel God. You can't hear God. And that's the way we all are, unless by God's grace he begins to blow that wind of his spirit on us. You talked about that a few minutes ago, buddy, how you were in church all those years, but there came that moment when suddenly your heart was moved and you said yes to the Lord. Jesus said, unless the Father draw you, you can't come to him. And so, in fact, when he talked to Nicodemus in the third chapter of John, he said, the wind, and he was talking about being born again. The whole context is speaking about being born again. But right in the middle of that, he says, the wind blows wherever it wants to blow. And we don't know where it comes. We hear the sound of it. But we don't know when it's going to blow or where it comes from. It just happens. And I never understood that till recently. I began to realize that that wind blowing, I believe, represents the Holy Spirit when he begins to dig through those calluses, dig through that hard heart, that shell. We're just created basically with a bent toward rebelling and a bent toward disobeying God. But when the Holy Spirit starts working, suddenly you find yourself interested in the things of God when you never were before. And you're checking it out and you're at least open to it. And if that happens, that's a good sign that God is drawing you, calling you. And of course, we have to either yield to that or resist that, but we need to recognize our natural bent is to have a calloused, hard heart that is more interested in our own thing than God. But God can change your heart. He said in his word, I will take the old stony heart out and give you a heart of flesh. In other words, a pliable, living heart. So that reminded me of your guitar playing, buddy. I just want you to know. And I remember the first time I ever heard you play, you played the Anchor Holes with me.
Yeah, I did.
You were in awe, weren't you, at first?
I was just, I can't believe we grew up singing this song in church, and now we're playing with the guy who wrote it. Mom, you got to come meet him.
And that stature has shortened with each passing day. I'm certainly not the person of great distinction you thought I was. Okay, I want to sing you a song that I sat down a couple of nights ago at our practice room with the band, and I just put this song down. I've only sung it in public, I think, twice, but it's called Stop the Music. And the point of the song is, we can sing all the songs about the Lord and have wrong motives and want to have the glory to ourselves and all. And this whole song was just a reminder. I just want to glorify you, Jesus. I just want people to be drawn to you. It's a very intimate song, about the third time I've ever sung it. So I want to play it for you now. Away.
let it all become just a faint memory. Something in my past never again shall be. If I cannot glorify the one who shed his blood for me, at a place called Calvary, do you know that they drove nails in his hands and feet, and his precious blood came streaming down? They placed a crown of thorns on his sacred brow. Then they laughed at such a sight. And as his pain was mounting so deep inside, heaven's gates were being open wide. And on that day, he paid the debt for me, for all eternity. At a place called Calvary, when he bled and died, he paid the price. Yes, he gave his life as a sacrifice. Was paid when he was lifted up, and if I can't lift him up, I'd rather hang it up, as I would rather stop the music and never play another note. I would rather burn all those songs I wrote and turn to other things. For I've had a good long look at Jesus, and I love everything I see. And I just want to glorify the one who shed his blood for me. At a place called Calvary, there's a place called Calvary.
It's hard to believe another hour has gone by. This has been a great joy to be with you again out there in radio land, as the old evangelist used to say when I was a kid. And it's been great to let this mysterious man named Buddy Miles actually come to the microphone and talk with me about his life. I still don't want to be around any of those snakes that he catches. But Buddy, thank you for sharing.
Thank you for having me, Lawrence.
I hope you never leave me.
No,
because you know that we would be in bad shape, because I'm definitely not a technological wonder. But we want to close with one of my most requested songs over the years. This was written in 1972. We sang it for many years with the fishermen. I say many years, maybe three, four. Then I put it out to pasture for many years. And Ray Bolts actually encouraged me to re-record it back in 2004, and it's just called There Goes a Real Christian Man.
desperately trying to find myself again. Stranded in Nebraska, needing some money, needing a friend. I was feeling sad and lonely as I stood beside the road. When a bald-headed man in a pickup truck, he picked me up and he took me home. There goes a real Christian man. There goes a real Christian man. Well, I spotted a little New Testament laying on the dash by the radio. And I hadn't bathed in 5 or 6 days. I was hungry, tired, and cold. And I thought this man was kind of different. He took a tramp right off the street. Then he said, my name is Billy. Let me fix you something to eat when we get home. There goes a real Christian man. There goes a real Christian man. Told me Jesus loved me, how the Lord had changed his life. As we walked into the kitchen, he introduced me to his wife. He said, as long as you're in these parts, you'll always have a bed. Oh, I knew I'd met a Christian by the things he did and said. There goes a real Christian man. There goes a real Christian man. He's got a Bible in his hand, got love and he understands. There goes a real Christian man. Well, I stayed in town about a week or so, and then I got back on the road. And I never got saved till 2 years later in a park in Buffalo. Well, I see a lot of phonies, a lot of hypocrites telling lies. But I know I've seen one Christian. Billy, I'll love you till I die. Oh, there goes a real Christian man.
There we go, there we go.
There goes a real Christian man.
That's our show for today. Hope you join us again next week, same time. God bless.
Me and my 88 friends, me and my 88 friends, I will sing you a song that will